Hello and welcome to the Culturefile Weekly with me, Luke Clancy. And this week, rather like our National Concert Hall, we're overflowing with the sounds from this weekend's New Music Dublin Festival of, well, new music, which in our case takes in everyone from Bach to Jennifer Walsh, played on everything from violin to Max MSP. We'll have everything from accordion-driven performance art music from Denmark to a marathon outing from Morten Feldman. But we start with composer and harpist Una Monaghan, whose work grows from traditional music but is never quite contained by it. For her new suite, Aenerox, she puts herself, her laptop and the computer music program Max MSP between the audience and instruments such as the fiddle, the uilleann pipes, the concertina, or, as we'll hear in a moment, the piano. All the better to pose some of the questions at the heart of the music.
What it means to go to another tradition and how that feels when that space is interrupted, how that feels later on, and what the legacy of taking over other traditions or borrowing from other traditions, and what does that mean about how the music is today.
My name is Una Monaghan. I am presenting a suite of pieces called Aenerocht at the Concert Hall as part of New Music Dublin, and I play harp and concertina. I work with harp and electronics, and I write for instruments and electronics.
I've just sort of come to realise how much of a pain it is when you write for piano, because it has knock-on effects then on the piano that you have to hire and where that piano is actually situated. So part of the concept of this Aenerocht, the whole suite of music, really was about people performing on their own. And so I've got six pieces and I wanted everyone to be in a different location. But as soon as you get a piano involved, it's not just as easy as walking to another bit of the room. So I've already encountered that issue, and they're saying, yeah, we can get you an upright if you want it over there. And I'm saying, well, I don't mind in terms of the sound, but in terms of hanging these speakers from the lid of it, that's not really going to work with an upright.
If we follow the wires out of the piano, they go down here to a big black box on the ground, and then a couple of laptops and something with an Extinction Rebellion sticker on it, I think.
Yeah, I picked that up when I was over in Scotland. So there's a mic on the piano as well, and that's how the performer controls when these sounds will come out. The black box is just an amplifier to power the speakers. The mic signals from the piano go into an audio interface into a max patch here. So a patch is really like a page, just a page on the computer screen. If you think of a word processor, you start with an empty page and you start typing. And so a patch is just the word for that in Max MSP. It's your open blank page that you start on.
For people who aren't even musicians, what does that do for you?
It's kind of like a Lego box to make sounds. So it's a visual programming language. You start out with a blank page and you add your building blocks. And so some of the more common ones that I use might be a method of getting microphones in so you can take live audio signals to be processed. You might use different toggle buttons to have things come on and off. That might be controlled by sensors that the performer has. It's just really a way of, when I've come up with a piece or come up with behavior that I want the computer to do, how I actually tell it to do that and when.
Just describe how this works for the piano.
So what's happening there is you're just manually plucking the strings, but the sound we're hearing is not just the sound of the strings being manually plucked.
No. Playing the piano sends a message to the computer via the microphone on it, and that then causes the other sounds to come from the speakers. So this piece for piano will be played by Salogni Canavan, and she's a piano singer and a brilliant pianist as well.
So this is one of a suite of pieces which we're going to hear over the week.
Yeah, they'll all be performed on the one night. And it came from the idea that I was performing with harp and electronics, and eventually I thought, well, how can I write for other instruments? But if you're working with traditional music, then the instrument that you're writing for is really not separated from the person playing it. So all of these pieces have been developed with not just the traditional instrument, but the person that I knew was going to play it in mind. There's all this information around the tune, and that might be pertinent to the tradition as a whole, or it might be coming from that person's own personal experience of the piece. For a start, I'm interested in how we can send that information out sonically
an example is the harp piece, the Chinwag. That came about from a conversation I was overhearing, really, in a house in Donegal between three elderly women who were friends. I was there in the conversation. I was having tea with them, but I was completely surplus to requirements. You know, they were having their own conversation. But within that, there was the figures of speech were amazing because they were from a different generation to me. The accents were brilliant. The things that they were talking about were also not necessarily going to be around in a while. So they were discussing wake traditions. And I just thought, this is a piece, these people speaking. So I was able to record that and have edited snippets of that conversation come out while I play harp. To me, to combine that with harp music is a way of enriching that harp music with voice, with stories. And the thing it does then is that an audience member hearing a half a sentence from that will finish the sentence with their own life experience. And that, to me, is what you're aiming for every audience member to have a slightly different experience and for them to have parts of their own life complete the artwork.
Una Monaghan there, and she premiered Éine Rock at the National Concert Hall, Dublin, earlier this week. Now, one of the busiest duos of the festival. Nick Roth and Matthew Jacobson play together in the band Redivider, but they also run Diatribe, a record label that takes in a similarly wide swathe of new music as the festival, from traditional to electronic and improv. Culturevile visited them at Diatribe HQ to hear about the seven, yes, seven albums they released this week, and the seven gigs that accompany them.
It's just maybe a certain aesthetic, a belief in, okay, we like this music and we think all of this music is good.
My name is Matthew Jacobson, one of the directors of Diatribe Records.
Our kind of raison d'etre was always just like, let's make good music. And we both have very eclectic tastes in music, so we've tried to represent artists that are doing something that's pushing the boundary of whatever area of music they find themselves in.
I'm Nick Roth.
What is a record label in 2020?
I think for me it's a place where music comes together. Yes, it's also a physical production house in that we make CDs, we make vinyls, but it's more a kind of a curatorial position. We're bringing together a lot of artists and composers under one umbrella. And that's really what the record label represents. It's a certain take on what music means right now.
So tell us about this thing you're doing with New Music Dublin, because obviously putting out a record every now and then wasn't difficult enough, and so you've decided to, the way to up the game a bit is to put out a bunch of records at the same time.
We have released records in sets before. We've always done sets of four. So New Music Dublin is a bigger step up. We're releasing seven records over five concerts in one weekend. Morton Feldman's For John Cage by Dara Morgan and John Tilbury. Dara and Jonah are two of the world's leading specialists and interpreters of Feldman's music. So, I mean, Feldman and Cage had a very close personal relationship. They famously met in the foyer of a concert hall. The audience had responded very unfavorably to a Webern performance, and they couldn't stand it, so they both kind of walked out in disgust, not at the music, but at the audience's response to it. And then they were kind of very close for the rest of their lives. Feldman wrote a lot of pieces that were dedications to friends. And so for John Cage, it's quite a strange Feldman piece, actually. I mean, it has all of the kind of the hallmarks of Feldman's music, which are the repetitive cells and, you know, the sparse textures. But there's also a lot of single line moving parts that you don't really find in other pieces.
Away Alone at Last by Lena Andonovska. So this is a solo record by Australian flautist Lena Andonovska. Lena was originally in Ireland to work with the Crash Ensemble a couple of years ago, and I think everyone in Ireland was so blown away by her musically and as a person that she ended up getting quite a lot of work and she ended up staying here. So we had kind of talked about doing stuff together, and Nick wrote a piece for her and a few different composers. I've been commissioned to write pieces for, and this is kind of a collection of that. And so there's pieces by Dunica Dennehy, Barry O'Halpin, by Nick, by Judith Ring. The record is called Away Alone Alas. When I heard the masters quite recently, I was really blown away by the sound. I think if you think of like a solo flute album, you may not think of a really, really big sound. This doesn't sound like a solo flute album. It's very big. Benjamin Dwyer, What is the Word?
The whole record is kind of a homage to Beckett. There are two suites of solo works, the six residua for solo violin, and there's a great essay accompanying the work as well, where he quotes something that Beckett wrote in a letter, where he says, "And what of silence itself? Is it not waiting for its musician?" And I think that he's really found a way of breaking that silence with this record.
So Saturday night is our triple bill, three of the groups that are, I guess, mostly improvised music or more heavily focused on improvised music. Redivider, Mirror Nation. Music that we've been playing for about the last 4 years, I'd say most of it. We decided to put just a greater emphasis on improvising because it was what we had all spent a lot of time doing anyway, and we're all really comfortable in that situation. So we spent the last few years playing like that, then went into the studio and did that and just basically recorded it, made an album out of it afterwards, which can be a nice approach.
Yeah, I think it was definitely the least prepared we've been for going into the studio, and it's definitely our best record. Babs Microbe.
Free improv group from the UK. They've released a couple of albums previously on the Loop Collective in London. Great improvisers. They're quite into drone, slow build, lots of processing. It's the kind of music that you listen to, I think you really get lost in it, and you sometimes don't even know where some of the sounds are coming from.
Guillaume Orti and Stéphane Payen, Volume 1. Two incredible French saxophonists. Who've been playing together for decades. Again, as with Lena's record, you wouldn't think it would be such a satisfying musical experience, but just the diversity, the way they explore the instruments, the range of styles, their exceptional virtuosity as well, and the way they play together, they have a very close sound. Xenia Pestova-Bennett, Atomic Legacies. So it's Xenia Pestova-Bennett, and she's a pianist, and it's her compositions, but the piece is written for something called the Magnetic Resonance Piano, which is created by a group called Instrument Lab. Essentially what it is like an e-bow, which is like a magnetic resonator, on every string of the piano. So it makes the piano look like a kind of cyborg robot piano. And that causes the string to vibrate and release the overtones or the harmonic series from each string. But then the pianist can actually control the way that the overtones are sounding through light sensors on the keys of the piano.
I think it's going to put us in a really strong place. We were talking about this earlier, and sure, we'd like to think people would know about the label anyway, but it's still surprising sometimes when we talk to people who would even know the records that we've released and would be like, "Yeah, I love that record. I've never heard of Diatribe." It's like they just know about the music and because of some of the artists we've worked with. So I think the idea of having a Diatribe stage at a festival like New Music Dublin will hopefully just get the name of the label out there a little bit more.
Nick Roth and Matthew Jacobson of Diatribe Records there, preparing for a big weekend, including at 9 o'clock tonight, Lena Adanovska on the Diatribe stage, room 103 in the National Concert Hall in Dublin. Now, one of those Diatribe albums Nick Roth mentioned there features our next guest, Belfast-born Dara Morgan, probably Ireland's most celebrated new music soloist. His violin playing can be heard in places as diverse as the Smith Quartet and the Spice Girls, as well as premieres from from John Taverner, Louis Anderson, Philip Glass, and a who's who of contemporary composers. With his former Smith Quartet collaborator, pianist John Tilbury, he's now recorded Morton Feldman's For John Cage, a marathon hour and a half of meditative intensity and extended technique, which the violinist essays with a baroque bow. Niche, then. Not a bit of it, says Dara Morgan.
I don't see it as niche at all. In fact, in another way, a lot of the music I work on, for instance, I do a lot of work in places like Abbey Road Studios in London as well, and a lot of the film scores I would record and the music I'm asked to create and help make, all of it in some way feeds from contemporary music and maybe some of the extended techniques and the scratches and the overtones and the unusual noises that you might have to make in a horror movie on a violin. And the way that's used in a piece of contemporary music. So, you know, there's lots of links throughout music. In this recent album I've just made of For John Cage by Morton Feldman, I use a baroque bow when I play this. The reason I do that is that I think around the time I started playing Feldman, about 20 years ago, I was one of the very first Irish members to join a group called the European Union Baroque Orchestra, kind of a trainee professional baroque ensemble. I learned a huge amount about, well, what more natural bow to use that for that than a baroque bow, which is shaped more arc-like and has a natural evolution and decay in the middle of the bow. So for me, it seemed to be a perfect natural pairing rather than something new and experimental.
Feldman wouldn't have been aware of a baroque bow, would he, or would he?
No, I think, you know, when Feldman wrote this piece, the baroque, or let's call it the period instrument movement, was having a revival, but I certainly don't think he was anyways, you know, celebrating that in his music. However, this piece was, for instance, written for my old teacher, Paul Zukowski, and their way of trying to achieve this very, very light, ethereal touch of sound was to try and play with the bow, a normal violin bow, unscrewed as loose as possible. It just happened to be two worlds were developing around the same time. The new music fraternity was going in one way, and yet the period instrument performance practice was coming out of the shadows in another direction. And I'm lucky that I came at a time where I was able to, in some way, join two of those train lines together.
I feel like it's an unparalleled feat of concentration for an instrument.
Absolutely. I mean, there is something very zen about playing this type of music. And I think it's just this idea of, you know, we go on stage to play a Mahler, something massive, and we're used to these epic scales of those works. Well, here we have that epic scale, but it's in very, very quiet and special small place. John Tilbury and I have performed this work all throughout Europe for over 15 years together. We have noticed in audiences, some very large audiences we've played to in Europe, there are on occasion people who just can't handle it. You know, so there are audience members who, they just say, you know, be 40, 45 minutes in. It's like, you know, internally they're screaming and they've just got to get up and leave. We have to somehow, without being put off by any of these things happening around us in a live hall, go into this very, very mentally aware but zen-like place.
For an audience, I mean, you're saying you get walkouts. I'm sure that doesn't happen very often. But there's so long when no spluttering and shuffling would be acceptable either, that it really, it's an effort on everybody to behave differently.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, what I love, I mean, in particular about this piece is that very intense live listening experience you feel from an audience when you're in the piece. So it's not a piece that you're just simply communicating to the audience as a performer and them taking the piece in. It's a very much a mutual engagement and a very, I would describe as active listening with the audience. And you really feel when you're in a hall, when the audience are part of the performing aspect of the piece, because their ears are so alive and electric, and yet they're so still physically and so quiet. Usually, or maybe I think about 25 minutes into the piece, you really feel you've hit this place where everybody has zoned in. It's really a special, special atmosphere.
Dara Morgan there on his new recording of Feldman's For John Cage. And finally on our New Music Dublin special, The Future of the Accordion. Accordionist Andreas Beauregard,
or in Danish, my origin, Andreas Borgo,
was one of the first accordionists to study at London's Guildhall School of Music. And ever since, he's been busy creating a new world of accordion music, one which brings performance art and his own body into the mix. The best expression of this so far might be the new accordion works he's commissioned from, among others, Jennifer Walsh, pieces which disturb not just the category of accordion music, but of musical performance itself. Beauregard's in Dublin to perform that Walsh commission, Self-Care, and take his position in front of the RTE NSO for that rare thing, an accordion concerto. Culturefile spoke to Beauregard about why his instrument is equally at home in Bach and avant-garde composition, and about what lies under the skin of that black shape sitting in the corner of the room.
The accordion, it is in a way a cyborg. It has this very humane aspect of the breath, but then if you open this black box, it's just packed with metal and screws and little bits and bobs and feathers, and it weighs like 17, 18 kilos. It really is a machine inside, but it's a machine that you make, or you try to make sound human. So I think that is an interesting source of inspiration for composers and performers alike. Bach and accordion goes well together, just like more or less any other Baroque harpsichord or keyboard repertoire goes well with the accordion. Because for various reasons, those two instruments actually have quite a few similarities. The range of the harpsichord is almost equivalent to the range of the contemporary concert accordion. There is the restrictions of dynamics on the accordion. Both manuals, the left hand and the right hand, they're controlled by the same bellows. So one stream of air current is sort of controlling the volume of both hands, which means in terms of polyphony and Baroque repertoire, where you've got voices going in both hands at the same time, you can't control the volume of sort of each voice. And you also can't do that on the harpsichord. It's the same dynamic from every note you push. So you have to use other means to sort of take out specific motifs and interesting stuff. So in Denmark, the accordion has, well, a tradition partly based in the folk music world, as is the case in many other countries in the world where the instrument is played. But there's also been developed over the last, starting back in the 50s and 60s, a more specific Scandinavian tradition for the classical accordion. I mean, one of the big, if not the biggest pioneer in developing the instrument as a classical instrument, sort of for art music, was the Dane Mogens Illegaard, who also brought the instrument into the academy back in 1970 for the first time.
The direction that you've taken it in is a slightly unexpected one, in that I suppose we use the term extended technique a lot, but in fact extended technique for you has more to do with you and your body than exactly what sounds you're eliciting from the instrument.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, if you say extended techniques to a musician playing, let's say, contemporary music, that would be playing the instrument in unorthodox or new ways, which in essence is core to the accordion, because all that we have of original repertoire is contemporary. So, you know, extended techniques is really not extended techniques for us at all. Part of my work in recent years have been to extend my performance field to also encompass my body and to challenge myself and maybe the audience with pieces and collaborations where the musician is not only creating things with the instrument, but using the body as a performative and expressive means in its own right.
The blockchain is maintained by every computer in the network, all keeping...
I met Jennifer Walsh first back in, what was it, 2008 or something, in Oslo.
You know what I'm talking about! You know exactly how it works.
Where I took part in, and she also actually, in a performance of her Barbie opera, XXX Live Nude Girls.
Invented by Satoshi Nakamoto in 2008.
Our collaboration started off very traditionally, actually, in that we sat down and I presented the accordion. I showed, you know, what is the range, how does it work, what are these register buttons, how do they work, what kind of sounds can it produce, what kind of extended techniques do we have. Quite soon, the focus was more on
complex mathematical problems.
All the off-the-grid sounds that the accordion made, all the sort of noises, all the... things that I didn't realize, but Jennifer suddenly is like, oh, what was that sound? And I was like, oh, that's probably this, or is it this? And we sort of explored the instrument together. I don't want to sound like I'm sort of leaving the accordion behind and, you know, not wanting to play that as the wonderful instrument that it really is. You know, because including more and more physical performance does mean that probably there'll be less playing the instrument in each piece, but the instrument still, because it's so young and it really has its future ahead of it, it actually does need attention in terms of developing conventional repertoire as well, which is something I treasure very much as well.
Andreas Beauregard there, and you can catch him with the RTE NSO in Goodmanson's Accordion Concerto on Saturday at 7:30 at the National Concert Hall in Dublin, in a programme with Siobhan Cleary's Hum and the world premiere of Jane O'Leary's Triptych. And that brings to a close this edition of the Culture File Weekly. We'll be back with more breathy cyborgs next Friday at 7. Till then, bye now.